You've been responsible for bringing artists like Cardi B to perform in Nigeria for the first time. There's stories you can tell about some of the challenges you faced that you can give us a behind the scenes.
We're coming from a strip club. She decides to stop the convoy and she holds the rail of the thing and just starts twerking. This 5:36 in the morning. Remember, we were coming from turn up and we meet the opposite of a Nigerian who doesn't care who you are, doesn't know who you are. And as she's twerking, you just hear in the back, I beg, we they go walk. I beg, like, what kind of nonsense is all this one that was, you know? In that moment, I'm like, I think some of those things are things that come out of organically what builds our tourism.
Dare Art Alade, he's a cultural architect. From chart-topping music to producing some of Africa's most ambitious live experiences, Dare has spent over two decades shaping how the world sees African creativity.
The creative industry is worth billions of dollars. And if you're any type of serious investor, you want to be asking, okay, where's the stream that would be able to bring back most of my money, you know, if I put X amount, whether it's in TV, whether it's in entertainment, concerts, festivals.
Well, what's your favorite one?
Oof. I see what you did there.
But behind the spotlight is a visionary, one who understands that arts, business, and cultural influence are deeply connected.
We had an activation and the guy who was supposed to supply the lights for the concert was a music rave thing, and the guy supplied lights, didn't supply cables. The show deal, showtime, there's no... Those were the lessons that we say, you know what, never again. That's what gave birth to one of our infrastructure companies called Rent-A-Rig.
In this conversation, he shares his journey from the stage to the boardroom and why he believes Africa's creative industries hold the key to our global influence. If someone wants to enter into this, specifically music today, what do you think it takes to like break it? So people will tune into this podcast and they might be on the way to work. They might be in the gym. They might be even on a road trip, right? And I want you to tell our listeners, what's the one thing you think they'll take away about the importance of the business of entertainment?
I like how you painted the picture, the backdrop. You know, so I'm already the tapestry of a road trip.
No, because literally someone tagged us the other day on a road trip.
And they told you that's what they were. So I can already, I'm just picturing wherever they are now. The business.
Yes.
It's multi-layered, isn't it? Where do we start from? So that's the proverbial show and business. So there's the show part of it, which everyone seems to enjoy, you know, on the stage, front of the camera, you know, and all of that thing. But I think the flip side is behind the camera. It's in the boardrooms. It's where the deals are made. Before a film, you know, makes it to the cinema, it's where ideas are sparked and scripts are written and people are employed, you know, to offer A, B, C, D, a flurry of services, you know, and that's where we're all in there somehow, right? If you're in the creative space, either behind or in front, sometimes both. But that journey has been incredibly interesting, you know, especially from a Nigerian perspective, the challenges, the nuances, you know, things you get to face day in, day out, but still being able to persevere, being able to put food on the table of many families, you know, that under your employ, and still able to show up and show out, turn every opportunity into, or every event or every opportunity you have with like clients or, you know, your own original executions, and use it to just keep setting the bar or reinventing and refreshing. Yeah, it's many layers to it. So I hope I've been able to touch a little bit.
And I want you to even touch into, what do you think is the myth of it in Nigeria? Because I love how you painted that most people in Nigeria just see the entertainment. They go to the concerts, which we're going to really go into the rabbit hole with that with you about the production. They enjoy the film. They, you know, there's so many aspects they enjoy. And people don't really understand there's the behind, right? Do you feel like there's a strong business case even? Like even for investors, because a lot of investors also watch the show to invest in entertainment.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the creative industry is worth billions of dollars. And if you're any type of serious investor, you want to be asking, okay, where's the stream that would be able to bring back most of my money, you know, if I put X amount over a period of time? And the opportunities are multiple, whether it's in TV, whether it's in entertainment, concerts, festivals, stage, there's comedy, there's dance, there's so many, you know, subsectors within the industry that you take, just you pick one for an example, and you can investigate and, you know, look at the entire pipeline. You know.
Well, what's your favorite one?
Whew. I see what you did there. I see what you did there. You think you have sense, but it works. It's now up to me to decide whether I want to fall for it or I'm just messing with you. Favorite. One of the favorites really is, I would say, a 30,000-40,000 people festival experience, because it has so many moving parts. First of all, start with blank slate. Okay, so, and you're looking at the business of it now. Yes, everybody's going to end up attending this festival or this concert or whatever, you know, the scale or scope is, and they're going to have a great time, enjoy the music, the theatrics, all of that stuff, food, drink, it's for them. But before we get to that particular stage, you got a clean slate. Look at plain land. You have to power, first and foremost. One of the key things, infrastructure. So water supply for everybody in the value chain to be able to use, right? Whether it's the toilets, whether it's whatever. You need power supply. So generating sets, because remember, there's nothing. If you're lucky and there's even power supply from the state or the government, you still can't rely on that. You can use that one to charge your phones and whatnot, but you can't use it to power equipment. Because you've invested millions of dollars in equipment that can get destroyed by one clumsy power supply problem, right? Okay, so we're still in the beginning. Yes, pace yourself. There's preparing the grounds. So if it's uneven, you've got to, you know, so whether it's tractors, whether it's machinery, yes, depending on your scale or your scope. Again, I'm using this huge 30,000-40,000. But there's so many things to cover. Staging is there, all the reinforcement, the sound, the lights. You need to look at tents, because there's nothing, remember, no structure at all. So you look at temporary structures. Each tent has to be prepped as well. So ballast to if you're in an open wind area, you know. But if you have buildings and the wind situation is not so bad, then you prepare accordingly. So there's just so many different layers up to, you know, crowd control barriers to water tanks to serve everybody from kitchen, cooking, you know, all of that stuff, to where are the vendors going to be? Where's the food parts of the festival? Where's the food village? If you have anything like that, drinks, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Then you have backstage, you have all the tents where, you know, A, B, C, D artists, what are the riders telling you? You have to prepare for all of those things, you know, the choice meats, choice drink, choice this. You know how you superstars when we want to book you now. Be like, oh, no, I only drink Perrier water. And so that's the level. So you go to that much detail. Mm-hmm. Then you have the show itself to worry about. Dancers, costumes, screen content. So you're putting people to work. We haven't talked cameras now. We haven't talked drone operator. We haven't talked, you know, wide angle, jib, all the toys. Right, you haven't talked people who will be employed to interview your guests, you know, so whether it's hosting, you know, podcasts within the festival, or there's just so many, and that's all the business. Depending on what service it is that you're rendering, are you being hired, are you doing it for, like, voluntarily to get some experience, there's such a huge economy off of that. You've not talked ticket sales, you've not talked marketing, you've not talked, you know, PR, you've not talked. There's just so many layers. So as an investor, if you look at it and say, you know, maybe festivals is my thing. Once I see where the pipeline is for money coming back, yes, I can see where the money goes to when it's being spent, you know, all the things and the people that have to come together to make this thing happen. But you are looking at it at top level. You put $100 million down. I want to know how much is So you may not, you know, really be in the nitty gritty, but these are the things that add up, you know, that really make it worthwhile, whether it's, you know, worthy of investment or not. You also have to look at the audience, purchasing power, you know, look at the times, the economy. Are you overcharging? Are you undercharging? You have to be sensitive to all of those things way before you go public and say, oh, I'm doing this concert. Tickets are A, B, C, D. So there's a huge business approach to it that by the time you are now watching the show as the audience, we are tired. Do you understand? Like, God, please, this thing should just do quick and finish, because it's that much work. But you have to do it, and you have to experience it as a guest as very effortless, smooth, no incident, hitch-free, parking was great. That's the number layer. There's still security. There's still logistics. There's still moving artists back and forth. There's still hotels. There's so many things. And that's that, you know, sector-wide, industry-wide tourism, you know, that's why the numbers you hear from a dirty December, mm-hmm. for example, just think of that and multiply it mm-hmm. across everything, hotels, resorts, beach houses, you know, and all of that. And people are getting put to work. So definitely the money is coming back somehow, right? As an investor, you want to find out where and be right there.
This is so interesting. I love that you laid this out, because I feel like when people complain about something at a concert or a festival, they have no idea.
They don't, but it's not their business. Mm-hmm. Really, it's not their business. So you want to play in a way that you want to minimize all that. Mm-hmm. And I think that when it comes to Nigerian executions and Nigerian global standard, you know, way of playing, you know, the kind of people that you would, there's certain brands that carry certain, I won't say weight, but you know what to expect when you hear a certain brand, you know. And I think operating that at that kind of level is what sets you apart from, you know, everybody is doing the same thing. Everybody's yeah. trying to do the same thing, but those are the differentiators. Your ability to answer those questions even before that, you know, before they're asked, you know what they're looking out for. They want a nice price. They want to feel okay. But if I'm paying this kind of 100K, or whatever ridiculous amount it is that it sounds like, what am I getting in return? So if I know that I'm getting value, I'm secure, I know that the artist is going to perform their butts off, give me a show, do you understand? Is this something I can bring my friends? Is this something that fear of missing out? I want to be there. I don't want to hear about it. When they're showing the replay, I want to say, that's me in the front, you know? Yeah. So you think of all that before you now offer them that service, and God help you, you don't cross your T's, dot your I's, you know. Issues happen very, very easily.
We created the Afropolitan podcast because we wanted to make sure we tell the stories of those who came before us and those who are coming in front of us.
Our stories deserve to be documented and remembered.
And over here at Afropolitan, our drink of choice is Inveroche, which is a gin from South Africa, because we believe African brands are global. So Eche, what are you toasting to?
To our builders, our innovators, to show that Black brilliance exists worldwide.
I am toasting to African creativity. I feel like the world is just blossoming with beautiful African storytellers.
Here's to legacy.
And stories worth sharing.
And actually, you're the right person to ask this question, because we had another guest that talked about the products, the machines? What's that?
Production.
The wire. The mixer.
Yeah.
The mixer, right? Mm-hmm. And
digital mixer.
Yeah. So can you talk about like how many of these products we have? Do we have them in Nigeria?
Equipment.
Do you have equipment?
Okay, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Up to recent times in Nigeria and in any serious artist rider, a Drake, a Nicki, whoever, that's touring quite decently. You'd hear a machine which controls, you know, top line lights such as the Grand MA. You'd hear that in Nigeria you only have maybe 3 pieces of the Grand MA, maybe Grand MA 2, and I think there's a new one now as well, the 3. And you can count on half a finger, or half a hand rather, how many people own that product. And that product, for example, is so key. You talked about Digico. That's for sound. This is just a light fix, a light that manipulates, you know, and controls all the lighting rig that you might have. And because these guys have programs, you know, they program their show in different formats and different, you know, hardware and all that. That's why they specify some of those things, not only because they're, you know, top line or some of the best equipment, but because that's what their show is built around. So if you don't have it, you know, so capacity infrastructure wise is also important. And that's how we can also attract a lot more of these international gigs.
So you feel because we don't have some of these things, because I always say, like, I see an artist do a show and I'm always like, I know they have a fan base in Nigeria, like, yeah. J. Cole, that was crazy. Yeah. That show was crazy, mm-hmm. right?
And I'm like, Cole Taylor. Yeah,
yeah, exactly, yeah. exactly. But what I'm saying is there's a fan base. So I'm curious, uh-huh. is that what's really slowing it down? Because I always thought it was due to cost.
So fan base is, okay, I'm talking now about viability of some of these artists yeah. actually touring here. The problem is plenty.
He's like, where do I start?
Yeah, the problem yeah. is plenty. Fan base is important. It's not the only thing to look out for. It's great to have people that are eager and excited. And even among that fan base query, right? Ask yourself, okay, what type of fans are they really? And you know, you probably think you reckon where I'm going with this. So what type of fan are you? Are you the type of fan that will pay money to go and see this J. Cole? Or are you the type of fan that just knows all his songs, but you can't really? Why? Because for me to price J. Cole in Lagos, by the time I pay for his fee, his logistics, it's not just him. Don't forget, everybody, security,
band,
glam, everybody will fly. They will tell you it must be whether business or private, depends on who it is and the deal. Remember, your expenditure is going. You are going to suffer this expenditure somehow because I have to make my money back, right? So at what price point will you stop being a J. Cole fan in Nigeria? Do you understand? So the touring, the business here isn't really, the ticket sales is not where that model hasn't been cracked yet, you know. No matter how high a ticket you pay, you know how high the price is that you pay for a ticket, it's never going to equate to how much is being spent for this experience. We're not there yet.
So I can have Beyonce, Cowboy Carter?
You could have, yeah. You can. And then maybe for that particular category of ticket, maybe it's only 500. Because I can't afford to make the space too big for that particular group of tickets. The rest have to be tables. If I could, I'd probably do everything tables.
Really?
Yeah, because maybe that's the only way I can make some, not a whole lot, but a more decent, you know, percentage of recouping some of your money back. So, of course, we want the great shows, we want the great artists,
yeah.
We want, of course. But why are they not touring and why are they not coming here? The purchasing power is a different ballgame entirely.
Dari, you've built a 360 degree creative empire long before others started thinking that way. What problem were you trying to solve with LiveSpot, and how do you see it evolving into Africa's creative infrastructure?
I love that problem. Mm-hmm. LiveSpot itself was born from a problem. Mm-hmm. The existence of issues. and I'll give you one example. So before LiveSpot was Soul Music, and I think the earliest part of LiveSpot as well was from doing a concert for Dare, the artist. And I hadn't done something in a while, right? And people were like yearning, you know, the momentum was just, you know, going towards that direction. I was like, okay, what can we do that's different from what we've done before? One, what's out there? You know, we really were deliberately wanted to set the bar, set the tone. I was like, what can we do? ideas together, and that's what gave birth to Love Like a Movie. Okay, and that was
I remember that.
Back 2013, yep. With Kim Kardashian was the first one. So birthing, or you know, coming up with the idea of Love Like a Movie was from a problem of us needing to do an experience, right? Remember, I hadn't done something in a while, wanted to do something different. And what we had cooked up and conjured up in our minds, we went around and we just didn't find people who understood it, talk less of be able to execute it or bring it to life for us. So we ended up doing what we had the concept for, and that's what gave birth to LifeSpot. And I'll explain how, because at the time it was the marketing director of Nigerian breweries, Heineken, you know, and the likes, and he attended Love Like a Movie. Okay. And I swear, this is his words. He said, right from attending, from getting down from his car to security accreditation, all the way going in, enjoying the experience and all of that, that he had never been to a more seamless, exciting, you know, everything was just perfect in his own words. Said, why don't we come and do some things like this for some of their brands like Heineken? And that's how we started. You know, that was our first foray into experiential marketing and whatnot. And like I said, it came from the need to solve a problem, you know, probably the same year or a couple of years later. Another example, even the same Heineken brand, we had an activation for them. And the guy who was supposed to supply the lights, you know, for the concert was a music rave thing. And the guy supplied lights, didn't supply cables. The show deal, show time, there's no... Eventually, we made something work. We found a way, but those were the lessons that we say, you know what, never again. Mm-hmm. And it's from another problem. Mm-hmm. That's what gave birth to one of our infrastructure companies called Rent-A-Rig. We supplied the industry as far as rigging, trussing, screens, LED screens, you know, stuff like that. So, and some of your biggest shows hire from Rent-A-Rig, you know, so whether it's stuff in December or one big artist or all that, yeah. So you're able to not just LifeSpot and what we do, but we're able to service the industry through our sister companies. So it's from problems. It's from problems.
But what gave you the confidence? And I know you might not know this, but I have a background in promotions. That's right, how I started. And I remember how I actually started. I was 18 and I'm in university, and I think Two Face is coming to perform in like 2011 or 2010. And they came to me as president of my student organization. Right. They said, oh, we have 500 tickets for the university. Can you just help us sell what you can?
And I ended up selling. That's how you sold the whole thing.
Sold the whole thing. Next thing, I think, was P Square. Sold.
What?
And so when you get.
Legend.
When you sell like that, you're like, is it like
bro,
that?
Bro, that's your CV,
and
man.
That's CV. Yeah. There you go in. But. The question then is, what gave you the confidence to, because it wasn't necessarily a lane you had gone to school for.
Yeah.
It wasn't what you had studied for, yeah. But you saw a problem. What gave you the confidence to say, we can actually move forward with this and actually compound in this industry?
Great question. And I mean, my response will be, I have to check the hard drive. And as it's coming, see, I'm looking upwards because that's probably where the answer is. But I'm piecing it together. It's something that's taking time, you know. And like you said, there's no formula. It's not like you go to school to study these things. As far as I know, and as far as, you know, what I do, I studied music, right? So as far as the music part of things, being an artist, writing, you know, singing, performing, and all of that has come naturally. And I think what I've studied kind of helps that. But I think that your question is more towards what the transitioning, yeah, you know, between being that creative and then delving to the other side where you're now creating opportunities for others. It again came naturally. And I think from as early as you look at things like shooting music videos, when you start to do your own projects yourself, you become your own project manager. Yeah. Right. And it's really from that constant repeated, okay, what are the line items?
Yeah.
It's actually just learning how to break things down, right? Okay, you see the big picture, but then how do we achieve that big picture? It's a real collection of little tiny things coming together. Mm-hmm. We talked about it, you know, logistics, this, that. And you now start breaking down. So I say, from all that time we're shooting music videos, we're already getting into the business side of things. Mm. From seeing the problems with Before Love, like a movie, for example, like, okay, we need to do something experiential, tick. We need to do something breathtaking. Okay, how do we do that one? Okay, let's try this and this. Then tick. How do we make them fly in the air? You know, what are the, we need a crane. What kind of crane? We need a telescopic crane. How many of them do we have in Lagos? Are there even any ones in Lagos? Oh, yeah, call this person. Call. You're already project managing. That's the level of, and you've come from being on stage, singing, dancing, performing for people, and having to now start doing maybe less of that and focus more on building stuff to the point where people can say, okay, you know what, let's give these guys, they get it, they know what, they may know what we want. Mm-hmm. Let's mess with them. Let's see if they can make this happen for us. And that's how that transition started. And then along the way, you have to now pick up professional, you know, experience. So whether it's, you know, doing courses or, yeah, my wife did the owner-president management program at Harvard. Yeah. Add that to, you know, her background in interior and already the experience with Garnet on the ground. Mm-hmm. I did London Film School directing. So film and TV, again, Real Housewives. So applying some of those things that you learn along the way to put it back into what it is that you're building. Yeah, that's what.
What did the reinvention look like, though? Because obviously, some people, and not necessarily from the people like the Heinekens or the marketing director who's trusting you to go forward, because your resume has just been what you've done. But from the artist side of things, from other artists who we knew Dare as part of our industry. Yeah. And now Dare is the one that is managing whether our light is on or off, right? Yeah. So what was that transition from a reinvention perspective where people have maybe put you in a box and you've stepped out of that box, and then they now need to, you now need to reintroduce yourself, like Jay-Z would say, right? Like, allow me to reintroduce myself.
Yeah.
What was that transition like during that period?
Oof. Another great question. I think that it's there probably different ways that I would look at it. So I used to, as an artist or as an upcoming, you know, singer and whatnot, I go to auditions, I go to reality TV shows, blah, blah, blah. Enter Project Fame, for example. So I've been a contestant. Then I've gone from being a contestant to being a judge, either on the same show, so alumni full level, circle. Right? Either on the same show or a coach on a different show and then another show, right? So you've gone from being just, as you said, you know, and transitioning to being on the other side. Sometimes I've been the host of these shows, like MC it or hosted, and you know, I'd be like your Ebuka or, you know, the IKs, probably before they set on the scene. But so that's one layer, one example. Now, from doing it as an artist and then now being the one to either give other artists an opportunity, put them on the stage, or be the one to curate their performances, for me, it's a thing of joy. You know, and I think what I get in response when I'm talking to some of them or we're rubbing, you know, creative juices and seeing what can happen. And we're on stage talking and we're in the moment. What I get from them is they're comfortable because I get, before you even ask the question or before you're concerned, I see where you're going because I've been there, you know. So that's some of the advantages, just vibing with them, being able to create that way. But that transition, again, naturally, it's not really something that I thought about deliberately. It really just happened that way because we started doing things we wanted to see. Mm-hmm. You know, we started putting our money where our mouth was. I mean, that's another layer. Investing, like everything you have into something that you believe in. And while everybody else would think that you're crazy, you know, but you stay the course, you know, you drink Gary initially. Normally, yes, because it's an investment and then it pays off because you're staying true.
Speaking of the investments, you've been responsible for bringing artists like Cardi B, Kelly Rowland, and other global stars to perform in Nigeria for the first time for a lot of them.
How do you think those cultural exchanges shifted the perception of African entertainment globally? And also, are there stories you can tell about some of the challenges you faced with either like a Cardi B show or any of the shows you've done that you can give us a behind the scenes of?
Yeah, there's a small lesson learned from, I think it was Ciara. Yeah, I think it was Ciara. So there was some devaluation going on. The Naira.
The macros.
I think that's when we went from 1 something to 300. Mm. Some huge jump like that.
So
like
those are still the good days compared to...
Yeah, the good days. Before, yeah. Just to let you know, we've been suffering long before. This new suffering. Nothing.
You guys are having it very easy. OG suffering.
OG of suffering, yes. And this one is, you've entered like one leg in, one leg out. We already committed at a certain
price.
And then things change. And you're already committed. So it's either you lose 100% of what you've committed, or you find some way to make up for what's left so that you can have something that you know you are not going to make anything from. So situations like that have come, but we've used those to build brand, build equity, top of mind awareness, showcase what we're able to. Yeah, it's and if you don't market yourself and you don't actually show people what you can do, then nobody's really going to know what you can do. Talk less of, you know, take you serious or book you. So yeah, that was just one easy example. But other part of the question.
The other part was, how did like a Cardi B, for example, I remember when she came, or even like a Kelly Rowland, how did this shift the perception of African entertainment globally?
So first of all, the fact that those things were able to happen here, you know, already puts us on the map. You know, talk less of the rest of the derivatives of her tweeting or posting. You know, we're coming from the strip club.
Yeah.
First time in my life.
You
never
sure?
been, never been since. Never been since. I went because of Cardi. Yeah. My wife knows. I love you, baby. I'm coming from strip club. Haven't slept in probably 2 days. My eyes are, you know. And she decides to stop the convoy at Sanusi Roundabout. Mm-hmm. The whole Zenith, you know. Are we allowed to?
Yeah.
The roundabout.
Yeah.
I didn't want to mention brand. Yeah, mm-hmm. But shout out. And she holds the rail of the thing and just starts twerking.
Mm.
And I'm seeing one random Lagosian, probably wearing a shirt tie, getting ready for this 5:30, 6 in the morning. Remember, we were coming from turn up and we meet the polar opposite of a Nigerian who doesn't care who you are, doesn't know who you are. And as she's twerking, you just hear in the back, I beg, we they go walk. I beg, wait. Like, what kind of nonsense is all this one that was, you know, didn't have time for anything. So just that, in that moment, I'm like, wow. Like, this is rich. Yeah. Like, you can count so much positives from what she's doing. She's loving it. Says it reminds her of home, you know, the islands, you know, all of that stuff. Dominican Republic. That is how they, you know, typically would do Christmas show. Just enjoying herself.
Yeah.
And you have your regular Nigerian too that's trying to get their day. That normal Lagos early morning grind. And that was just so beautiful. But then those videos she now posted later, after we had done the concert and everything, her talking about she wants to come back, she needs a Nigerian passport. I think some of those things are things that come out of organically what builds our tourism.
Yeah.
You know, the stories are told that way. That's how people love to enjoy, consume, you know, content and news. It needs to be relatable. We didn't plan those things. It was from her heart. Whatever came from it too was from her heart, and just the conversation was just organic. And I think that, alongside all the other things that happened behind the scenes, you know, strengthening partnerships, you know, we bring these people in. Sometimes we have them sit with young Nigerians, young creatives that can have a conversation with them so that there's an inspirational level, you know, layer to that. Yes, they're coming to have a great time. And whatnot, entertain us. Yeah, they're doing it for money, but there's also that we call it skill development, but it's some of it is soft skills, some of it is from mentoring and inspiring some young people. And then even when we do it for professionals like stage productions and, you know, the more technical stuff, we do skill transfer programs, so workshops, trainings, and things like that. So for us, that's where we build the value in bringing some of these guys in, because they tell the story outside, tells us that we're on the map, tells the world that we're ready. You know, they had a great time, we're safe, you know, a lot of things can, the positivity. But then there's also many other layers that, you know, we're able to develop on the business side of things, you know, relationships, making them stronger. And
I want to zoom in on one more thing, especially for our viewers who might not understand the challenges that come from the FX or foreign exchange crisis Nigeria has been through the last couple of years. Can you expand a little bit more on those foreign exchange challenges, and how are those macro factors, you know, affecting creative businesses like yours? And also go a little deeper into, obviously you start off with one set of assumptions. How do you try to keep track of, I know what we do is I'm always on Wall Street Journal, Financial Times. I'm reading data across multiple inflection points and then saying, okay, this disposable income, you're going to go like this as this is going this way. How do you keep track and how of these different macros that affect businesses like yours?
It affects also, just as you've rightfully put it.
Yeah.
But I think just being nimble,
you
know, through it all is where the answer is. You have to be able to adjust on the fly.
Yeah.
Because when Nigeria happens to you, there's no warning a lot of times. So hot potato, bro. Like keeping things balanced in the air is tough. So you never know. So you plan, you continue to strategize evolvingly. You just have to keep revising, fine-tuning, and that's the only way to stay afloat. There's no template. Yeah. You know, if you're hardworking, you put structures into, you know, the right type of structures, you keep your ears and eyes, you know, peeled for what's happening, pay attention to your surroundings, try and get good partners, you know, that you can do business with, that you can trust, and you just keep pushing that way. That's the only way, you know, in a nutshell, to answer that.
Aside from the Ciara story of 180 to maybe 360, was there another story within these last 4 or 5 years when it jumped from, I think dollar to naira was maybe about four something and it went all the way to maybe 1500 or 1800?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're trying to buy equipment, replacement on lights, anything. And, you know, still part of the things that we try to push, you know, as far as government and policies is concerned, is the creative industry really has no, they don't cut us any slack.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's from job creation to importing, you know, equipment, gear, you know, you don't get nothing.
No tax rebates to you, nothing.
Nothing. So we're all dealing with those same issues, you know, and some of us on a certain level, some of us on another level. We have to bring equipment in one way or the other because we're not manufacturing, you know, here. And you want to do things in like a top, you know, when we're talking globally accepted formats or equipment or gear, you need to be able to be in that conversation. So that's where the investment goes. Then trainings, you know, go into that. But as you are buying that gear to bring them in here, it's at whatever the rates are.
And customs too. Do you have to navigate that too?
You have to. Same thing everybody goes through. So there's no, until some of those things happen, which, you know, we're all yearning and we're pushing for. No matter how small it is, it starts and shows, you know, people that there is concern. You know, they're looking out for what, because what we all do, you know, contributing back to, you know, it's something. So it's just a little something to say thank you and encourage you to keep doing what you do. That's what we're looking for.
And I would even, it's funny you bring this up, because I personally feel a lot of the work you've done was like a precursor to where we are today, which is everyone's looking at Nigeria. Everyone's looking at December. Yeah. They're looking at April homecoming. They're looking at cultural period, which is Fashion Week, film, and Art X. So at this present moment, where do you feel your space or where do you feel your business is in all these like interesting moments are now happening? And even further, because I know you're bringing African Entertainment Week. So I want to talk about how does that even fit into this whole cultural exploration?
Yeah. the shift, the yes. current. I mean, you said it, you know, we were there, been there, ahead of the curve. Some of the things that we've done in the past haven't been replicated yet.
Nope. That Cardi B experience.
Yeah. Even way before.
Yeah.
A lot of those things haven't been replicated. So we've been ahead of the curve. Where we are now, in two directions would be one, Entertainment Week Africa, like you mentioned, and that's mainly development. You know, it's in the master classes, it's in the trainings, the workshops, it's in the deal room, you know, which is part of our lab spot, CSED, that's the Creative Skills Enterprise Development Program that we have, which is, I mean, over the last three editions, we have employed over 2,000 people. We have raised in excess of 2 million US just for startups, you know, different businesses in their, you know, different stages and whatnot, raising capital for them, supporting their journey. Some of them, you know, you'll be like, oh, they were found, you know, at Entertainment Week Africa. We've had all sorts of speakers, you know, over 300, you know, speakers over the last multiple editions, everybody from Mo Abudu to Funke Akindele, you know, giving master classes, you know, to young, you know, inspiring and aspiring young ones. So preparing the next stage, the next level, you know, the next community, and using everything that we have or touch points that we're kind of conscious about. So whether it's fashion, AI, tech, entertainment, you know, comedy and all that. And then we put it into a programming where we can learn, we can develop, but at night we turn up, you know, have a good time, the concerts, the comedy shows and all that. So it's become a really huge platform that has now grown from Entertainment Week Lagos to Entertainment Week Africa. So we now have more Pan-African involvement from across the continent and then the diaspora as well. And yeah, that's one part which happens not in December anymore. We're moving it away from Dirty December.
I like that.
Yeah. It's now, in November 18th to 23rd. Yeah. 18th to 23rd November. That'll be Entertainment Week Africa. So should be bigger than the last one, the last three. This is the fourth edition. So that for us, development in a nutshell is really that's our baby. It's part of our way to give back. And that's through our initiative, through the Live Sport Foundation. You know, and then the other you mentioned is the concerts, the turn up, the Dirty December itself. And then the second, we talked about the first being Entertainment Week Africa. The second is, of course, centered around Dirty December. Big announcements to come, you know, regarding that. We have a few experiences lined up as well. And we've always been part of the you know, we've always dictated, you know, the tempo in many ways. You know, when people start making their announcements, they usually would kind of wait or like what's LiveSpot doing, you know, and all of that. So that's not going to be any different this year. We hope that all the experiences can be bigger and better. And we'll just take advantage of the huge influx, you know, that's envisaged to visit Nigeria. The whole tourism boost is, yeah. So we're going to be playing in those two.
I'm actually curious though, and I know the announcement's coming, so I won't pick into that specifically, but I am curious from it feels like last year, and I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's TikTok and Instagram. I don't know if there was some storm that happened that made it like go beyond the typical Nigerian bubble. What do you think is the opportunity for Dirty December? Like, what would you envision if it was in its perfect form?
So if you look at what Carnival is to the islands, right? If you look at what culturally, like Boston Marathon, you know, is to the fitness, the lifestyle, because that's going beyond sports, you know, and all that. And if you look at maybe what Mardi Gras or Spring Break is for those parts of the world, that's what Dirty December has become for us. You know, it's Africa's summer, you know. That's our vibe,
I like that.
Right? It's Africa's summer. And the truth is, when it's your time, it's your time. You know, all what you mentioned have all added, you know. If we had social media when we used to rock the stages, you know, like some of the kids have now, it'd be a different case. Mm-hmm. So social, digital definitely has done a number. The diaspora has done a number as well. Our artists performing on all the biggest stages across the world in different ways, whether it's arenas, whether it's clubs, whether it's pubs, everybody's chipped in. You know, let nobody be the gatekeeper, because all of us have played one role or the other. And I think it's the summary, you know, it's the total, the sum of all of these things happening and just coming into that energy that we saw last year. For us now, it's how do we sustain it? How do we improve on it where we can? Depending, of course, it's not going to be automatic. So we'll just keep learning lessons, you know, year in, year out. How do we make it more of a staple? Because it's become, yeah, or it's becoming a staple. It's still in its early days, but you have to look at the long game and then look back and say, okay, how do we workshop it to get to that point? Where it's more opportunities for the common man, you know, the guy who wants to join a gig, you know, because not only does he want to see his favorite artist, but he wants to make money, you know, and make a living while at it, you know. The waiter in the restaurant, the woman, you know, making food and selling the Airbnbs, you know, everybody, that ecosystem. So how can we make it bigger each time and resolve some of the attendant problems? Because more people means more everything. And if you don't have enough infrastructure or enough cars to fill the roads, enough good roads to fill the cars, you know, and the rest, yeah.
And so I now want to step back a bit into who you are, right?
Me.
and I'm curious because, you know, you come from a family of it, right, with your father. And so I'm curious, how has his own artistry as a person shaped who you are today?
Oof, me, boring me. Yeah, met it at home, my father, not just my father, but his mother as well, who was a pianist, probably like the first one in, was it West Africa or something like that? That I don't remember the history too well. But she used to teach, and then he was a huge talent himself, pianist, jazz, mostly blended high life, was very live oriented, didn't really record anything much. So he was the kind of guy that you call to your show, do you understand? Or you see him in concert, that's the experience. Or he's on TV interviewing people and performing. That's like a Jay Leno, David Letterman, you know, type of vibe. That was him. So coming from that, I'm like, man, this guy is too much. Like, I can't deal. Like, that's enigmatic level. There's no, if you know or you knew him, yeah, it'd be like, and early on I knew that and I didn't bother trying to, So I just started carving my own path. There was no need. The shoes were there, but I had the comments like, oh, you remind me of him. You sound like him, this and that, but that's about it too. Don't, cause there was, yeah. So I'm giving him his props. But yeah, lineage meant someone had to do something, right? And apparently that someone was me. And I just went with it, developed my own vibe. Funny enough, did a lot of things that he also, you know, did in his time. So some of that, maybe you'd say hereditary or in me time for house, that kind of thing. So I went through everything, hosting shows, performing, learning the basics, singing in choirs, having my own band, writing my own music, becoming a solo artist, all of that stuff.
But how does it feel now, like, as far as you going into the business of it, right? Do you feel like you still want to go back to the artist side of you, or do you feel like there's room for two? Like, how do you feel about
they've always coexisted? Yeah, you know, I've never stopped performing. Yeah. What I haven't done in a while is release.
Yeah,
you know, new music. I have a lot of unreleased stuff, but I don't know if they'll ever come out. But yeah, I still get to climb stages and do my thing. I'm happiest, you know, in front of a crowd. That's my thing. But I have found new joy in creating, you know, for other people, whether it's for clients or whether it's for TV, for a client or for, you know, things that we're building ourselves. Yeah, I just roll with it.
Okay. And now I want to talk about you and your wife, and specifically, I love that you're here because recently I got a question from someone who watches Afropolitan that said, because me and my husband do this podcast, right? We have a business together. And she's like, you know, I'm in business, my husband. I would love people to talk more about that. You know, like, yeah.
Especially in the African.
Yes, like from context. The African, yeah, especially yeah, yeah, yeah. When there's this element of, you know, your husband has to be in this way. He has to be the head of the household. Your wife is here. Like, I just want you to demystify that. Like, talk about
my fellow brother. Yeah.
And you've been doing it for so long, right?
Yeah. We have. Interesting question. And well done to you guys. I think it's not easy. Yeah. Nothing you can tell me. Yeah. No, but that aside, I wish she was here. You know, that'd be nice to just gist and vibe about it. We've always just done things together. Kind of, yeah. Once you enjoy each other's company, it's nice. Yeah, of course you annoy each other. That one is normal, standard. I mean, who's more annoying? Who's
definitely her more?
No, yeah, for
sure. Definitely.
I want to start problem. Once you start that kind of action, voila.
Definitely.
Don't mind me. You know, fun fact, right? So a lot of my social media, she opened them. Yeah, when I was still an artist, like that, like really grinding. Social media. She opened my Twitter, Facebook. Sometimes she'd be chatting with babes. You know, they'll think it's me. But she's wondering. we used to take the piss a lot back in the day, just messing around. And that's the level of friendship. That's my guy. Mm-hmm. You understand? So able to do stuff like that, able to evolve into her becoming more of the business, you know, handling, you know, the business side of things. And I ended up handling more of the creative stuff, even though she's a core creative, you know, so a lot of the creative conversations, she's also in there, and vice versa. I get to dabble, you know, into the business. So we've just kind of cross-pollinated. I learned a lot from her. She also picked up a lot of stuff on this side, especially on the entertainment, since it wasn't something that she did naturally. She was in design, you know, so graphic artist and all of that. So it wasn't far away. Once you're creative, you're creative. So it wasn't a huge leap, but a lot of the things we both learned along the way, and we just continued to grow and get stronger and work to each other's strengths, really, you know, and cover each other's weaknesses. That's really what it's about.
But do you have any advice for someone who wants to go into it? Because we have a huge male audience that watches this podcast, and I'm just, any advice to a guy who maybe might go into business with the wife or thinking about it, anything you would say?
Make sure you figure it out as best as you can early on. It's not like you're going to have it all figured out, you know, off the bat. Once you have that willingness, that understanding, the cooperation, and you understand your roles, because one person can't do everything, right? So if one person is going to lead, let that person lead. I don't mind letting anyone lead, you know. There's kings and there's kingmakers, right? So you can't be both, you know. If you want to be the one in front of the camera, be the one in front of the camera. If you want to be the one behind the camera and setting things up, you know, be that person. Support the one in front of the camera. Then the one in front of the camera too will support you when the time comes. It depends on what structure, you know, what it is within the industry, whatever the business is. But just, I think clear roles is very important. And try not to have a chip on your shoulder. You know, you can save that for the outside people. It's both of you against, you know, anybody else. Then when the doors are shut, you can figure out what may have gone wrong or how something could have been done differently, you know, between yourselves. But you got to be united out there, you know, because once once they figure you out, if you allow them to figure you out, then there's really nothing else that's between both of you, right? It's supposed to be between. Yeah. And yeah, it's not for everybody. Yeah, it's not like it has to be that way. But those that kind of see it as a, I'd also say be open, you know, be open-minded about it. Try it. You never can tell, you know. Give it a shot. See what works.
I know for us, what's worked for us is a lot of therapy and counseling. Would you say that that also played a role in just being able to communicate effectively, ego management, perception management, being able to say, like you said, this is your strength, this is where you should lead, this is, or she says vice versa, this is your strength, this is where you should lead, and then not, both not trying to compete against each other, but compete with each other against the world, you know?
Yeah, I touched on that already. Yeah. It has to be both of you against the world. Yeah. It's a tough one. The tongue and the teeth, they can get clumsy sometimes. As close as they are, the tongue can get bitten, right? brothers fight, family fight. So disagreements is not abnormal, you know. In fact, you're two different people. You should have different opinions, you know. But what I'm getting at is the commitment to make things work. That's where you got to throw all the ego aside. Have we decided that this is what we're doing? This is who we are. This is where we're going. Then that already brings down whatever shield or wall is in that conversation and make it a level playing ground. Remember the commitment. Once there's that commitment that you both agree to, that come what may, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And then you just reset and you take it back to what works. Of course, there's going to be ego. Of course, there's hot flashes, crazy moments. You say the wrong thing. You want to take it back, but it's too late to take it back. It happens everywhere.
Yeah.
But once you have decided, agreed that, you know what, I might be the most idiotic idiot to you all the time, but that's... I'm your idiot. Jonathan. So it gets to that. But it takes time.
Yeah.
You know, got to keep working at it. And after a while, it becomes seamless. Mm-hmm. Second nature, you know, stuff like that. You start to... How long have you guys been?
Married 2 years now.
Oh, well.
Yeah. You're babies.
You have time.
You have time.
Don't stress yourselves. You have time. You're just going to learn more how to handle each other.
From an energy management perspective, which is, this is very nuanced, right? I feel like when we first met, I think I met you at Life Spot.
Mm.
I remember just coming out like, Darius seems like somebody who's learned how to manage his energy.
Yeah.
And as somebody who does work on that, I know that from the outside world, it might look like it's easy, but I know it takes a lot of work to... First of all, become aware of energy, how to manage it, and especially in environments like the country we're in, how to still hold on to it as you navigate business, relationships, friendships.
Yeah.
What were some of the frameworks or the thought processes that got you to say, hey, if I'm going to play this game for the long term and be here for the long term, I need to be able to manage energy, set boundaries effectively, and also communicate these things to the people I love the most, but also to people who I might do business or work with as well. And it's nuanced, but I know you get what I'm talking about.
I get it. And you're right. It's nuanced. You're going to figure it out on your own. But what can I say about that really? You have to make sacrifices. Yeah, you want to keep that energy. You want to maintain a certain kind of energy. You have to find yourself first and foremost, right? You know, what are the things that you're okay with? You talked about boundaries and things like that. What are the things that make you snap? Now, those things that make you snap, is it when anybody does it or is it one particular person? Do you understand? Because you find situations where, okay, but you were okay with that person doing it. So why is it me that you're, you know, you don't want to be a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very easy to say, oh, I don't like this. But you're collecting it somewhere else. Yeah. What kind of person is that? So don't be careful not to be holier than thou and still, you know, if you're able to draw those lines, be firm about it, that's fine, you know. But how are you doing it? You know, it's really how you do some things that depends, you know, determines how people around you will react to it. So, yeah, you got to work on yourself, you know, the things that are your limits, your things that you can't do, what you, you know, out of reach for you. Be honest with yourself. I'll try to keep, that's what keeps my energy. I don't do more than I can handle. If anything is becoming too much for me, I'll just exit and go and find my calm. So much so that, okay, maybe you feel like, okay, I'm just too cool. I'd rather listen, you know, to understand what's going on than say the wrong thing or react in the wrong way. I'd rather listen. And they say there's wisdom in that, you know. So I end up doing a lot of listening. And it gives you time to think, you know, be able to look at things objectively and then come up with a reaction or a response that hopefully is not stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I just thought about a thing on the show. I'm cool because I know my capacity.
You know, they do pass yourself. And I think when you do, it helps whatever the situation is, whoever is in that situation. And they also learn how to deal with you better because there's consistency in behavior and the things that you're okay with, things you're not okay with. But also be open, you know. Don't shut your eyes to anything is possible. Always look for excitement. Always, there's no point doing something that you're not really happy about or you're happy with, you know. If there's fun in what you're doing and it's making you money, that's the perfect, you know, combination. Then you now have someone that you really dig doing it with you.
It's the best.
That's it. Yeah. That's the best. But it comes with its own challenges. So you just have to figure out your love language, your communication, how best, whatever is working for you when there's challenges, and when you surmount those challenges, figure out how you did it and try to replicate. Okay, that worked. Don't just sweep it out. You know, figure out maybe there's something that you can refine and it becomes your system.
And I actually have one other question around this lane because there's something you said, and this might be a little controversial. But you said your wife is your guy's your friend.
That's my guy.
But I feel like a lot of Nigerian men, they're not marrying their friend. I feel like there's this culture of like, you know, maybe she's pretty, she comes from the right family, you know, whatever the reason, and they're together. And then you see them with other people, and then when you ask them, they're like, oh, you know, but she's not fun. And so I'm like, so why did you marry that person? And I related to that. I felt that when you said it, because that's how we feel about each other.
Yeah.
You know, when someone asks me, I'm like,
it's not always like that for everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah. You come from a different, you know, you're different people, you know, your own vibe is different, whether it's through family, even there would have been that layer between both of you. Right.
Yeah.
So who is she?
Mm-hmm.
Who is her father?
Yeah.
What was their name? That's our way, right? Then they could care less whether you guys get along or there's that layer
any
too,
chemistry,
right?
That's
your wife. You understand? And you have to go with it. Yeah. So people deal with it. Yeah, there's different pressures. They come from different schools of thought on that aspect. But you can't generalize.
Mm-hmm.
What works for you is what works for you, you know. There are people out there who don't find their partners interesting to have a conversation with because that's not why they were with them in the first place.
Mm.
So maybe you are expecting something Norma, your own Norma, but that's not what works for them. You know, maybe he married her because she's the most beautiful woman in his village. Eye candy, maybe. Which means maybe, okay, you want beautiful children. Mm. You're just looking at your lineage. Do you understand? You don't...
Nothing else concerning you.
Nothing else. Do you understand? There are... There's cultures like that that, you know, there's arranged marriages.
Yeah.
Are you going to say... You know, and there are people who genuinely want to know each other, who like each other. I'm not saying they work with, you know, well with each other, but they're able to cool. They can have conversations. They can have. So definitely, I think, and it can only be from my own perspective, someone has to be your friend. Mm-hmm. It has to be someone you can have a conversation. We can talk about anything,
yeah.
You know, about current affairs, what's in the news, what's in the blog, you know, gossip, you know.
Range.
That's your guy. Yeah. You need that range. You know, and the things that you don't know, that you learn, teach her. And she can also teach you. That's how you grow and you pick up. So you have to work with what, you know, works for you.
This is our ChatGPT. Uh-huh. Yeah, nobody does research past.
More than that. Uh-huh. And that's it. I'm sure you'll be picking up lot of...
No, I was realizing how much I pick up from her. Like, just off... Not that I'm actively listening, but that she will talk.
You don't actively listen to me.
No, I actively listen, but there's the, like... Things you will be like, well, this should not be my focus because I'm a man,
yeah.
Type of language, yeah. And then you don't see yourself repeat it in other outside. Like, yeah. Where did you even
when
learn this from?
Yeah.
So I was like, nah.
He will even be talking like you.
Yeah. So it definitely happens that way too. So it's really, it's really interesting to see how that dynamic shapes because again, that person has to be your person because yeah. If the person's not your person, okay, what they're saying is yeah. Like, fam, I even respect you enough to. Even listen to anything you're saying. You
and
know?
It's from being able to hang out with each other.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's in the company.
Yeah.
It's okay, cameras are off. Nobody's watching. Can we hang?
Yeah.
Can we grab a drink? Mm. Can we just... That's all.
Yeah.
How often can we do that? Before... And there are those moments though, that you don't want... No, not again. Like, not this guy's face.
Yes! Yeah!
But you now shift your focus to something else.
Yeah.
Either you make a sandwich or you're cooking or watching a show. That's how... It's not 24/7.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not possible.
Yeah.
No matter the love that is there. It's not possible. Can't be for that long.
Yeah.
So it's in the doses. And if you say that this high dose, I don't mind it. Mm. I'm feeling it. Then that's the person.
Darius, so you've been... You started with the Nigerian music industry like way back. You have historical context of how different it was back then.
Yeah.
And when you look back now, we still have a long way to go. But when you look back now, what are some of the things you can say that you're proud of and how the music and the industry has evolved? And what are some of the places where you're like, hey, we need to be careful about this side of things so that we maintain some sort of ownership even as we step into next level? Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of like our performance level. Like from a stagemanship, you know, putting on a show, a lot of our guys have really, really stepped it up. I'm happy about that. Even from the Sonics, you know, back in the day when software, you know, just getting the sound right, getting the samples right, the mix, the master, I think that we've come a long way. All you need to do is listen to maybe like a Remedy song or Plantation Boys song and listen to even Vintage Whiskey, not even the new stuff, you know, Bakurumo to you can just hear the difference. And the difference that 10 years makes, 15 years makes. So there's that, you know, there's that journey. The sound, the stage performances. I think also even the consumption. You know, the way, bro, when I was on the radio between 99 and 04, we were probably playing 90-something% of Western music.
Really?
If it wasn't hip-hop or Urban AC or Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears, you know, Maroon 5, you know, all that, you know, Shania Twain, all that type of, yeah. And you could count the number of Nigerian artists at the time that would even get radio play. Idris, Rugged Man, Two-Face, Plantation Boys, Then the older guys like Christy Essien, Veno Marioge, Rex Lawson Fella, you know, and the rest of them are the kind of things that you would play sometimes, you know. And then nowadays, look at the consumption patterns. You can, if it's not maybe Jay-Z's latest song or Drake's latest song, maybe it's Wenta in the Club One. The rest is Afro. So much so now that for you to enter a Nigerian party playlist, that Western song must be
hot.
It must be hot. Like they know your song top to bottom. It's the only reason why you are breaking Afrobeat's mix. You are putting how? Or everybody, nothing can stop me.
Yeah, 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 yeah. One of those only classics.
Something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All
yeah.
I do is win, win, win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You play.
Yeah.
Then you go now, back.
You will go back. We love our sound now. If you told anybody in 2002, 2003 that will be like this. So the consumption is through the roof. Every party, and you travel around the world now, in the malls, wherever, you know, radio, Sirius, satellite, anywhere, it's there. You know, so that the permeation also is just something that's we're everywhere now.
And we carry it on our head, though, like ambassadors.
And everybody's played a role. Yeah. Diaspora, you guys that came back, you guys that come, first batch, second batch, the ones that come, you know, every December and go back. Everybody plays a role.
Yeah.
Those here, the ones that stream it for free, that don't like to pay, you know, somehow, we're all, you know, chipping in and making it what it is today.
That's amazing. And I even want to talk about, because you talked earlier about you went from being an artist to now a coach on, you know, shows like The Voice, Nigerian Idol. And so I'm also curious, what do you feel a Nigerian creative needs today? Like, if someone wants to enter into this, specifically music today, what do you think it takes to, like, break it?
Talent is not enough.
Yeah.
You got the talent, you got a great record. That's not even enough of a start. You know, before you find that one record you have, you need to have at least 20 to 30 songs that are worthy of at least go through and say, okay, there's a few things here that's interesting. If you did have that, you'd need money. Because breaking anything nowadays costs money.
Wow.
It costs a pretty penny to run any campaign. So whether it's digital, you want to go viral, you're looking for influencers, you're looking for people to make videos with your song so that it, hopefully it can pick up. There's no hopefully in the marketing. You will pay for it. The hopefully is after what you have paid for. Hopefully it will. So you spend money, and even at that, you're still hoping that you can blow. So if you had the great music, you had the fine boy, you can dance, you can do this, you can do that. That's only still part of the half of the beginning.
Yeah.
Then you have money, it's still part of. There's no guarantees. So if you're able to, if you're different, if you're able to grind, use your own network, your own community, whether it's from church, whether it's your streets, whether it's your family, whether it's your social media, whatever you're able to do, you use what's within your reach and your power, and you just start to build community, build it up to a point where people start to notice you one way or the other, whether you're getting onto shows or you're getting, you know, the gigs, the free gigs that are for promotional purposes. You wait for another layer of the next set of people that need to hear you out. Meanwhile, you're still pushing, you know, on radio, and it's a lot of work. You can do all of that, and at the end of the day, nothing pops.
Interesting.
There's no,
so there's like a machine behind it.
It is a machine. Yeah. You will, there are some basics that you can't escape. You can, you could do, there's free distribution on digital, but how much of that really gets anywhere? Because for you to really enjoy distribution, you have to plug into some specific playlisting, different platforms and all that. You need to know people in some cases to get into those doors.
Have you been following the Clips rollout? The artists, the rappers, the Clips.
The Clips? No, yeah. I haven't.
It's been a beautiful rollout because it speaks to like the traditional way of like they had their album already done almost like a year and a half ago.
Right.
So they had time to really just put it in the right cultural moments
the
way it used to be, right?
It's been so good to see, refreshing.
I think a couple of questions before we close, Dare. You have hosted presidents, had conversations with Bill Clinton, Kofi Annan. How do you leverage?
I remember that Bill Clinton one.
How do you leverage cultural influence to access political and economic power?
Oof. Oh, that meeting with Bill Clinton was just a pure nice example. So I was hosting a city hall type conversation that was put together by Arise Nduka of Baibgena, the Duke, in Abuja. And he had President Clinton there alongside some other dignitaries. And I think I ended up hosting or singing or something like that. Now, from my radio days, right, and this is one of those night shows, and I did everything. I did prime, morning, after, everything. I did overnight, everything. Made commercials, clean studio, I did everything. Don't let them tell you otherwise. So one of those nights, I was playing music on the radio, and it was jazz, whatever. I just saw Bill Clinton, saxophone. Did you know that he played?
No.
I didn't know. But it's behind the scenes. Yeah, but it's a deep cut. Yeah, you have to really know his history.
So that kind of shock, right? So he was either coming up on stage or coming downstage, was backstage in Abuja, right?
Mm.
And I'm like, hi, Mr. President. Of course, not much of a reaction. The follow-up question he made, just came to my mind. I'm like, why didn't you bring your saxophone? He just turned around like this. I caught his attention immediately. That's for me, culture, influence, power.
Yeah.
It's how to break the ice.
Yeah.
It's how to have that conversation. So you're in a room or you're in a platform where, for me as an MC or an event host, I'm in charge. I'm in control. I may not know what I'm about to say, because it's a bit of a freestyle, and you guys, are probably running half of the world's economies, but I don't care. Yeah. You pay me to be here. I have the microphone. So I'm going to say, but that's, with power, there's, a lot of responsibility as well, So I've learned over time with experience to, I've got to be careful of how I say certain things, how I, interact and whatnot. But one thing you won't take away is knowing how to break the ice and how to start that conversation. So as soon as I caught his attention and he turned and he looked back, I knew I had it.
Yeah.
Do you understand? So for someone to like that, to stop in his tracks, turn around and, in his nice Southern draw accent, I didn't think it was, and I'm like, that's it, Of course, he looked at me like, how does this one know, about saxophone playing and whatnot? So, moments like that, or meeting President Bush, in a similar type of event where he would even help my friend take a picture.
Mm.
So I walk up to him, he's sitting down. Let me even rewind. So I'm on stage announcing food service and whatnot. And I'm messing with him, doing American accent, talking like I went to school with him. Like, he should not fold my hand with we go back a long way, And he was psyching me and everybody was laughing and all of that. And next thing, he got up and by himself went to the food, the serve yourself buffet, whatever station, and was serving himself. So he was that kind of, he was already that kind of guy, So by the time I now went later to take a picture, because I'm not going to miss the opportunity. Like I said, I'm the MC, I have the microphone, I can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to stop me from going to meet the president or anybody to, So I went up and asked him if I could take a picture, and he got up took the picture, and my friend was with me, took the picture of us, and then he offered to take a picture of me and my friend, you know, and just, it was just a really cool exchange. So sometimes it's things like that that get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
You might not be needing or wanting anything, but this is how relationships are built, so much so that, you know, you can walk into any room thereafter.
I always tell people that people underestimate how much, if you're intentional about the entertainment and cultural aspect of things, it opens up conversations for other things because people are much more relaxed in a fun and relaxed environment. And then, you know, they can, you can leverage that for other opportunities in other sectors as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you could advise the Nigerian government on the creative industry policy, what would you tell them?
Creative industry
policy.
Industry policy to support.
We've been saying the same thing for a long time. I remember telling the president a couple of years ago now that when the bilateral conversations, you know, starts, when the administration starts and you start to fly in and out of all these different countries, that you should have key creative business
stakeholders
with the delegation to have meaningful, you know, conversations to build, you know, both countries, you know, investment in both countries from a creative perspective deliberately, you know, because without you, some of us in this room already, we've courted majors like Amazon, Netflix, doing all sorts of deals. Some of us are doing a couple million, a few millions worth, you know, of production deals. But if you're now more deliberate from a government level, you know, the anyway, I said my piece. We're still waiting for some of those things to, you know, materialize in the way that they should. We do see that they're trying to piggyback and anchor a lot more on this creative industry and whatnot. But for us, it's still early days. We need to see tangible investments, especially in infrastructure. Yeah, we need those policies that would, you know, tax breaks. You know, we've also been clamoring for December, Dirty December, for example, from an immigration perspective, to make it visa free for, even if it's just Lagos,
to start with,
right? And make it really seamless and easy for people to come in and spend money, encourage them to spend money and just see the uptick, even if it's just for 2 weeks or whatever, just create a window. And so we're waiting. Hopefully, I think it might be something that they've started talking, you know, between government and immigration, customs, all the different stakeholders. Let's see. You know, but infrastructure is one of the main things that we have to worry about. Some of the things that we're also worried about and is in those trainings. So if we train you now on how to operate this iPad, where's the iPad after you're trained? Where is that actually the iPad that you now use to practice and, you know, really get that experience? So it's one thing to do the training, but it's another thing to be able to actually practically put what you've learned, you know, into use. So that's where we're playing more, you know, now, especially like event production, sound engineers, lighting engineers, and things like that. Practical things that they can use. And a lot of people we've trained have either gone on to the Middle East, as Nigerians now, you know, brain drain because dollar, you know, they'll make more money out there. So we need to be able to retain a lot of people that we're also training.
A lot of people might not know this, but in Ghana, so we participated in the whole year of returning. In fact, it was the same year Cardi came. I remember, you know, after Nigeria, she went to Ghana. I remember they were dragging me personally on Twitter. They're like, you know, Cardi had a better time in Nigeria than Ghana because we played a role for the year of return. But Ghana was able to say, okay, you know what, from December 15th to January 15th, right, or even just from the whole December to January 15th, visa free.
Yeah.
Anyone can come, right? And just something like that, obviously, you've seen how it's benefited them. So hopefully, if there's anyone listening from the government side of things, this is something we should really prioritize, especially because there's this whole clamor for how do we attract FDI or foreign direct investment to the country. And I'm like, look, these are low hanging fruits, you know?
They are, they know.
Yeah. They're listening.
They've been told, they're listening, they're watching. And it's just how to storyfy the whole thing. You know, people want to have a great time. Yeah. The beach life is there. The nightlife is there. The slavery routes, you know, the coastal journey by boat to see what the slaves went through, you know, is there. There's just so many experiences. There's the boat regatta. There's fishing. There's, kayaking. There's, the guys that do it out of, the boat club by Bonny Camp now, you know, there's actually guys who go out to the ocean and sail. Yeah. Normal sailing, yacht sailing, you know, and all that. There's E1 that's coming in, in October, you know. There's Formula One that we're bidding for, you know.
Like, I'm still trying to understand that one.
My dear, the thing is, some of them sound outlandish.
Yeah, until
they're like, are we okay? Why are we, some even World Cup that the next, but you see, we have to aspire to these things, right? And sometimes it's when these things are about to happen that we force ourselves to develop infrastructure.
Yeah.
Hey, visitor, they come, we have clean palo, tidy the palo, we have visitors come. That's what, but if that's what it would take to actually get certain things done, I mean, let's do it, you know, but I don't want us to, it's not everything that's bad, you know, let's look at some things that actually potential, you know, especially that bring in, you know, this FDI.
Yeah.
Because when it does come in, who, we want it to stay here, right? Are we ready to actually receive it? Yeah.
All right. It's time for our rapid fire segment.
Yes. Rapid, so popcorn style. No, it'll be easy. It'll be easy. Okay.
Let's see.
So the first question that I have for you is, who was your favorite artist to bring into Lagos?
Cardi B.
Why?
She was just crazy. She like your girl next door, really cool, fun, no airs, and crazy, like local, like exactly what you, if you do anyhow, if you just, you know, but she was fun, very relatable, and gave a hell of a show.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. And beyond, like all that PR, all that stuff wasn't part, it wasn't anything agreed or written, it was just organic love. And yeah, I'd like to work with her again.
Mm. Well, who do you want to bring outside of Cardi? Like, is there another international artist you'd love to do? Yes,
now. Plenty now, but I can't say the name in case we're actually.
Okay, who is like, you don't think it could ever happen, maybe for whatever reason, but you would like someone that's just far off.
Far off.
Because I would love Ed to Sheeran. Say it. Oh.
Ed Sheeran.
Who did you think it was going to be?
Ed Sheeran
is most likely far off.
Really?
But I'd love to see.
You think so?
Yeah, it's far. Do I bring the money now?
Yeah, but to be fair, he doesn't always travel with a band like that too. I went to a show in Oakland and it was just him with the
and
guitar.
Did they tell you how much?
No, obviously.
Even that guitar, you will pay.
No, Ed is not a joke. It's not a joke.
Interesting.
Okay.
He would be good to see here, though. I know it'd he has nice. A lot of he has
and
fan
he has
base
that record as well with Fireboy.
Yeah, Fireboy. So.
Yeah. And Burna Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, why is it? I didn't realize it would be far off because he's already integrated himself into the culture.
No, he says it's far off. He says that the money that to bring him
is far off. Anyhow, you want to
Okay, okay. What is your favorite Nigerian food, like dish?
There's a couple. Pounded yam is up there for sure. Either with vegetable or egusi. Pounded yam is there. But dodo, you can't do anything in life without dodo.
Yeah, I'm glad you reinforced that.
That's why I'm looking at him, because he loves the soggy one.
Yeah.
A man of culture, a man of taste.
That one. Then you can anything you want to, you can put if it's eggs, no problem. Yep. Even though that's not really the pea. That one too is vegetable. The best is vegetable. If you want to add a little rice, no problem. Make it white if you are putting vegetable so that the vegetable can stain the whites. You understand?
you know, as like we're getting older, you know, the healthy choices start to come up. And then when they're telling you the things to take away from your diet, every time when it comes to
all
planting,
those ones are done,
I'm like, you can, when it comes
you cannot do food farm and eat dodo up under the jam. Sorry.
No, no, but what I'm saying that the dodo stays.
It cannot stay.
No, no, it has to.
If you're going to do,
they'll say that you can bake it or you can. You don't have to fry it.
It doesn't work. Ah, if they tell you on ripe plantain, is a scam. It helps, you know, in terms of cholesterol and not eating. Yes, boiled on ripe plantain with whatever. Yes, but it's not the same. It's not the same. So please, if you're going to do fit farm, let's do it properly. Veggies. Egg whites, you know, all the right stuff. Drink water, plenty water. That's chicken breasts, no problem. We can do that occasionally. Mm. Ah, but to say no, dodo. Ah, dodo is life. Mm. What's yours? What's yours? I'm curious.
What's your favorite Nigerian food?
Ofensala.
No, I'm not. I'm not really a soup person.
So what's?
To be fair, she doesn't eat Nigerian food like that.
No. I don't know. I'm trying to think what is something that is like my go-to.
It's not Nigerian.
No. I was gonna say something boring, but I actually really love moi moi.
Yeah, she likes moi
moi. I really love moi moi. But you know what it is? I think there's something nostalgic about it for me.
Do you like the corned beef one?
She doesn't like any attachments. Just
but that's more of a health. Like, I think that's just me at healthy. But funny enough, I think now that I reflect on it, I love moi moi because I used to, like, Sunday mornings, my mom would make it. Mm. And she put the corned beef, and then we have custard. So I think there's something.
Oh, you have custard.
So custard and moi moi, you know.
In DMV?
That's it.
You know, on this show, and she always acts surprised. And I was like, oh, I didn't know this element about
custard,
you. I didn't
know
this part of you. Yes. Remember the one with the bird on it? The custard?
It was a layered custard.
Yeah.
Probably like that.
Yeah.
I was asking her, there was one time I asked her, like, I wanted to understand her struggles in life. Like, what was her biggest struggle period? She's like, when I was in tech and there was nobody, I used to soak Indomie.
I didn't say that. Come on now.
I was like, you said Indomie. I said, wow.
That's the rich lifestyle. Yeah.
I'm a comfortable, I guess, soft babe.
I guess your soft life is it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. I can relate.
The last question we ask every single guest is, who do you want to see on the Afropolitan show?
Who do I want to see here?
Yeah, like whose story do you think needs to be told?
Mrs. D. Oh, she come? Yeah. My wife. Yeah.
Your wife?
She should be here. Yes.
Okay, I would love to have that conversation.
So you have her opinion and
perspective.
Yes, perspective to some of the things I've said today. Like your husband said. What do you have to say about it? Yeah.
I would love that, actually. Yeah, nice. We were going to have her.
We would.
Well, thank you so much. Oh, thank you. We appreciate it.
Happy we finally, got to do it.
This was good.